Hello and welcome to this week's Comic Roast. I'm your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. I'm here with Brian. You can find on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. And we're here with Damien. You can find on Twitter at Damien Johnston. Chris will be here eventually. And you can find him on Twitter, if you feel like it, at SkateXEdge. Don't forget to check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/reviewandroast. And we have quite a few cool things today. I realized that we skipped the best thing ever last week, so my apologies, that was on me. We're going to bring it this week, so be ready. Also, our number one is Black Monday Murders by Jonathan Hickman and Tom Coker, looks like. And our over-under for the week is Murder Mystery Stories. Could be books, movies, anything of the like. Let's do this.
Yeah.
Right?
Into it.
All night.
All right.
Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
So my week, I did a lot of laundry and cleaning and cut the grass. That pretty much is going to sum me up. That and I'm watching a lot of The Arrow. I'm already in the last, I don't know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks I've been watching, maybe. I'm already almost done with season two. Look at me go. Nice.
There you go.
I do have my issues, but whatever. I guess we'll save it for a podcast that we do before the next season starts, maybe?
Sure, I don't know, maybe.
Sounds good.
I know you and Mike have done a couple, and I know that we've talked to Damien about getting on with Mike to do one, but it never actually happened, but whatever. I'll be ready soon.
Yeah, if I can do it, I'm there.
Sweet. Yeah, I got nothing else. I'm drinking coffee so Brian can talk now. Superman shirt, go.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I got nothing, really. I mean, other than the fact that we just did a lot of heavy board gaming last weekend.
You know what? We did. It was actually kind of funny, because here in the Chicagoland area, it was the weekend for Wizard World, which used to be kind of awesome, but over the years just gets worse and worse and more expensive, so we didn't go. But the comic book store that we frequent always has a boycott sale because, you know, nobody likes Wizard World anymore. So we got like 30% and 33% off depending on who was at the register. And not only did Mike finally pick up Star Wars Rebellion, we convinced Jeff to buy the Game of Thrones game. I actually just grabbed my comics like an idiot. And Brian bought some other stuff too. I don't remember what he bought, but we ended up playing Game of Thrones on Saturday, and we played Rebellion on Sunday. Have to say, I think they're both going to be really good games when we, you know, play them for real. Seeing as though we pretty much standard in both games, we didn't actually figure out all the rules until the game was almost over.
It's true. And speaking of Wizard World, apparently there was a little bit of a controversy last weekend. This is pretty good. You're going to like this. A gun store in Barrington tried to set up a booth at a comic book convention.
Okay.
Apparently, the Wizard, I don't know if the Wizard does the Wizard company, whatever the heck, Wizard magazine, if they do a convention out by you. But here, this gun store in Barrington thought, this is going to be an awesome opportunity to not only sell replica guns to science fiction and like video game fans, but also a perfect place to sign people up for gun training programs.
Oh, okay.
Because nothing spells protecting your video games and pop vinyl action figures like putting a cap in someone's ass. And weirdly, I like that. Fans that were going to the show protested en masse to have this gun store removed, and the owner was actually surprised.
Wow. And, well, there you go.
And his response was, they're letting me do it at Dragon Con in Atlanta in September. I don't see what the problem is. I thought sci-fi fans liked guns.
They just don't like dicks.
I guess they don't like real guns. Like, guns that shoot lasers and, like, stuff like that are probably okay. Yeah, like Luke Skywalker's, you know, type of guns, I guess, are all right, but
like I was saying when you mentioned it the other day, I mean, there's always the couple of booths that sell swords and knives, and that no one has a problem with. And the replica guns, you would think, with some of the cosplayers, depending on the outfit, would kind of go hand in hand. I'm not saying it fits for a Comic-Con, but we did see at Wizard World in St. Louis last year, we did see the Incredible Hulk selling gutters. So, I mean...
What?
Yeah, there was a booth set up there for gutters, and the guy was dressed like the Hulk. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen.
That's weird.
Yeah.
That's like I imagine, like, the earliest Comic-Cons I went to in, like, the 80s. I feel like would have had stuff like that, like a chiropractor set up and, like, the Wells Fargo has a booth, you know? Like that. I can imagine that sort of stuff then, but like nowadays it seems like there's plenty of room for booths. Like you don't have to go scraping through the dregs to find someone to set up.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that, I mean, like I said, selling replicas probably wouldn't be a terrible idea, but you would think that a gun store would just make more money going to a gun show. I mean...
Yeah.
It makes more sense. They're all over the place out here. Right over the border in Indiana. I don't know. Not exactly a good fit, I guess. But hey, what do I know?
I read something in relation to that article, too, that said a lot of these big conventions now are making people that bring replica and toy guns go through a lengthy screening process before they'll let you in the door with it. Like, they test every possible scenario to make sure that it can't harm anybody. And some of them just flat out just say, leave it at the door. Like, they will not let you walk around with it. But this guy was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to sell some guns. And Wizard Company was like, oh, yeah, dude. Totally.
See,
why don't you bring bombs and some landmines? This will be great.
Depending on the place, I don't really know how much I believe that. I've seen some pretty outlandish cosplay weapons in my day. Plus, if you're going to have two or three...
No, it's very recent that they started cracking down on toy guns at conventions.
Well, I was going to say,
within the last year.
If you're going to have two or three booths that sell actual swords, I feel like bringing a plastic gun shouldn't be that big of an issue.
Well,
just saying.
I don't think there's been a weird rash of people running through movie theaters stabbing people with samurai swords of late that I'm aware of.
I'm just saying.
Like we were just talking about this at work yesterday. I'm pro open carry chainsaws because I feel like that's something I could run away from. But like everything else, like nope. Because I also feel like you got to plug a chainsaw in, so you're not really going to get far beyond the outlet with it.
They're called gas. On.
I feel like I can dodge and like 80s roll my way out of that. Like throw like a pallet of brownies in front of the guy and it gives me a fighting chance to, you know, slide under the John Madden end cap and out the door.
Did you say 80s roll?
Yeah.
Strangely, I know exactly what you mean.
It kind of like became a thing. Do you remember that sci-fi series from the 80s V? They tried to remake it a few years ago.
Yeah.
Actually, the remake was really good.
Yeah.
But,
it had that pretty girl from Firefly, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
But we were watching, like, before they aired it, they did, like, a sci-fi weekend thing. This, like, 2008 or whatever, where they played the original, like, all in one showing. And it seemed like every scene, the guy with the bull haircut kept, like, he would say something like, we gotta get over there and stop these aliens, and then he'd like roll out of the scene, and you're like, what the fuck? Everything is like a somersault. This is awesome. So that it just became awesome. Like the 80s roll, and then, yeah.
Well, you know, you're talking about open carry. I should share a little something with you. My bass player emailed me the other day. He's working at KOW, which is like our local NPR station.
Oh, okay.
And he got this message that someone named Darth Prophet will be standing in front of the KOW studios with a AR-15 semi-automatic rifle open carrying until he receives the media coverage or the jihadis start shooting him, as is what he said.
Media coverage about what? Just the fact that he's standing?
I'll read the whole quote because okay. It probably sounds weird the way I say it. NPR has a show called All Things Considered, and that show does not consider all things. Therefore, a person calling himself Darth Prophet will stand in front of the KOW studios until he receives media attention or until the jihadis start shooting at him.
Why would there be jihadis in Seattle?
I don't know. I mean, there might be, but, I mean, who cares? I guess people care, but I don't care. It's stupid. It's just someone who was, like, wanted media attention.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, and that's part of the problem with people like that, I guess. It's this irrational fear that there's terrorists just all over the place in America looking to kill you when, let's face it, now I'm not trying to get all political here, but there have been more people killed by the police than there have terrorists in this country.
I feel like there have been more people killed by Sasquatch than there have
I know. Terrorists. Yeah, I mean, the last thing, I mean, you need to worry more about getting struck by lightning than you do being shot by a terrorist in this country. Sorry.
Well, I'm sure Darth Prophet just tuned out, so way to go. He's like, I really like their sci-fi take on everything, but man, these guys are just getting a little bit too...
Everyone's just so afraid of their shadow, but...
Yeah.
It's... Well, whatever. We can go on a huge tangent here, but I'll okay. Let it go.
So, was this Darth Prophet guy, was he, like, more politically focused, or was he more, like, Darth Vader inspired?
I'm gonna say he was politically... motivated, but I'm also going to say he probably. I think there was a little bit of Darth Vader in there. That's actually not unusual. We have a guy here named Tim Iman, and we all hate him. He's this.
Damn it, Tim.
I don't know how you guys have it in Illinois, but out here we have like an initiative based thing where anyone can get enough signatures can get something on the ballot.
Neat.
Yeah, it certainly has like benefits, but most of the time it's pretty much abused by people who try to get like bullshit laws passed. Right. And this Tin Iman guy is like the king of this stuff. He got famous by passing this $30 car tabs thing. Like, no car tabs should cost more than $30 for anyone, regardless of like how expensive your car is, how much money you make. Which in theory sounded like, okay, that sounds fine, I guess. You know, I'm thinking like, well, my tabs are like $40 for my car. I mean, I don't care. Of course, I didn't vote for it because I knew like something like that is always packed with bullshit, and it was. And then what ended up happening is that money that had to get made up by charging $30, now everyone pays way more. Your tabs are $30, but now there's all these new taxes and fees and additional charges to make up for the fact that people who are licensing their brand new, you know, freaking Tesla or whatever are only paying $30, just like someone who's registering their 1976 Datsun. So to make up that, it became a totally regressive charge where now it's spread across to everyone. So now I pay like $120, you know, every time I have to renew my license, whereas the guy who could afford the Tesla also pays like $120. So that was, like, one of the things that he got through. He's really into that whole, like, we should all pay the same thing. Just saying. It's not my fault I make a ton of money and you don't. Like, just doesn't understand how, you know, how governments work. Or I mean, he understands. He just doesn't like it. So his he'd go around collecting signatures, and people would be like, oh, Tim Iman's attached to it? Okay, no. Like, like, he almost didn't have to know. Like, he did something to make, like... Yeah, like he got another thing passed that was like no tax increases can happen without a 2/3 majority in the House and Senate of the state House and Senate or whatever, which is almost impossible. But it went to court and was found to be unconstitutional because that's not how it works, even though people voted for it. But so he's just like, oh, everyone hates me. Everyone thinks I'm the big monster. So he started dressing up in a Darth Vader costume to collect his signatures. I think assuming that it would endear us to him. But everyone was just like, you know, I know Darth Vader, and you, sir, are no Darth Vader. Like, maybe Jar Jar Binks, but you're not Darth Vader.
Darth Vader would never be this big of a monster.
Yeah. So, anyway, we hate Tin Iman.
I don't know if we have a guy like that, but we definitely have a contingent of people who... Because Chicago is known for a few things. Being super corrupt is one of them. Being heavily Democratic is another, and our taxes in the city tend to be pretty high. So there's a large contingent of people in the suburbs and collar counties and so on that tend to be, we shouldn't pay any taxes at all. So there's a large swath of the suburbs and the rural areas filled with, you know, don't tread on me types. So
right.
Nobody, they don't have a spokesperson though, and nobody that's dressing up like William Shatner or anything cool like that to kind of make you go, well, he's got a point. I don't know if I agree, but I like his costume. So let's see what he's got to say.
I think the closest we had to any kind of costumed hero was back in the '90s in the hardcore scene. There was a guy that would dress up like Jesus and carry a cross around.
Oh, I remember
I've seen guys like that.
Yeah, he never said nothing to nobody, but he would just show up at a show carrying a cross.
It's like a weird place to show up, too.
Right? Well, he probably thought we were all heathens, but listening to the devil's music, even though it really wasn't. It was probably Shelter on stage. Singing about reincarnation and Hare Krishna.
It's not Jesus, though.
Right, yeah. It's all the same. Doesn't matter.
I like this Tim Ivan guy. Is he, like, famous, or is he just, like, some local nut?
Oh, he's famous now. He was mentioned on this podcast.
That's true. He's now nationally famous. No, he's been on, like, TV shows and stuff. Like, he's probably been on CNN or Fox or something. I'm sure he's got a Wikipedia page. He's an irritant more than anything.
He sounds
and there'll
like
be another guy like him.
He sounds like a guy that would be a regular on Fox.
Yeah, you'd think so. He's from the islands out here, which are generally, like, kind of like you're saying. Like, everything outside the city, like, outside of Seattle or Tacoma, everything's pretty conservative. But, I mean, even Washington conservative is probably the same thing as, like, Oklahoma liberal, you know? So... So, I'd say probably conservative here probably leans more libertarian than it does Republican.
It's kind of the same here. I mean, I think it depends on the age group. I think if you're over 65 and you're Republican here, you're probably way to the right. But I think if you're, like, under 50 and Republican here, you're probably more libertarian, like you said.
Yeah, it's more like, oh, you know, nothing wrong with gay people. And yeah, there's that whole, what's that bumper sticker? I want gay couples to be able to protect their marijuana plants with automatic weapons or something.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
You know, and there's a charm to that, but there's also, like, a simplicity to that I think is, you know, if your entire ethos can fit on a bumper sticker, then you're probably, you probably aren't thinking this clearly enough.
Yeah, although there is, like, a weird contingent of high school kids that are, like, super psyched about Trump, or at least they were, like, 6 months ago. I don't know if that's the case now, but...
Well, they grew up watching him on TV. You're fired! Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah. I wonder if there's like a level of trolling to that. Like,
I think
like they're committed to that kind of bit, you know?
I do think there's a definite shrelping aspect to it.
What's shrelping?
It's what we used to do, like back in the hardcore days. We used to drive around Wrigleyville. It's because, like, we're all, like, the trust fund kids hang out, like, at Goose Island and all the bars around Wrigley Field. And me and some of the other people we hung out with, we would drive around and yell out the window just random nonsense. And this guy, Jody, would do it, and he had, like, the best shrelping voice ever. So my friend Rich would sit in the passenger seat. I would drive. Jody would duck down behind Rich, and he'd yell in the most obnoxious voice ever. And we'd drive super slow past these bars. And just, you know, yelling stuff about men wearing flip-flops and whatever and just drive away.
Okay.
So I feel like guys driving by in a truck going, Trump! That's like the modern-day Neanderthal version of shrelping. I don't even know. I don't know where the term came from, but it just stuck. It's been with us for a while.
I like it.
It's not bad. It's basically just drive-by shouting.
Okay. So some people would... Oh, I guess... No, I'd say you would maybe be described as scrubs, but I guess not really, because that was that's a different kind of drive-by yelling.
Is that a reference to TLC?
It is a reference to TLC.
Nice.
Nice.
Best friends hanging out the passenger side, or hanging out the passenger side of your best friend's ride. Me.
No, I don't know nothing about that song. Wait, what song? Never mind.
Oh, should I say what I did this week?
I mean, you can. I mean, that's what we're here for.
I'll go real quick. I started watching The Strain.
Oh, really?
Is this the one that was on a few years back?
It's still on.
The third season's about to start.
I thought it was like a two-part miniseries.
No.
No, it's ongoing, which I'm skeptical about its ability to continue being ongoing. But I started watching it, and it's, you know, it's okay. It's got its strengths, and it's definitely got its weaknesses. One of the big weaknesses is I really hate the way the character design for, like, the main baddie.
I'm very unfamiliar with the story. I mean, it's some kind of virus thing, right?
It's a Guillermo del Toro project about essentially vampirism, and it's this vampirism that's carried through these kind of crazy worms that sort of get infected into your skin, and then basically turn there's some cool concepts. Some, you know, you've seen the vampire thing a million times, and you've seen like the zombie thing a million times. It's a little bit of a marrying of the two, at least the modern zombieism, where it's if there's more of this like pathogen idea behind it, because the heroes of the story are CDC workers, and which I always kind of like that kind of thing when like the hero is some like my buddy wrote a Predator story a long time ago where the main hero was an FCC investigator who was investigating some strange transmissions that were coming out of this swamp. And I thought it was a great...
Did you say SEC?
FCC?
Oh, I think you said SEC. I'm like, Security and Exchange Commission? What is that guy going to do with Predator?
That would be awesome, too. He's been knowing... Mr. Predator.
Wall Street
been
Predator.
Some interesting things in the pension fund here. Predator hits a button on his wrist, turns invisible.
Right?
Have you ever seen... And if you haven't, when we're done, you should really Google, just Google Everyday Batman. And it's just these little cartoons of Batman, like, doing the dishes or doing going to work or whatever. We should do one for the Predator, Everyday Predator, just sitting in an office. Like you said, asking questions and he just disappears.
I'm into it.
Brian's not. He's giving me the face like I'm an idiot. So it's just me and you.
All right.
We'll take this to the millions and Brian can sit here with his stupid shirt on.
I need a sample. Before I can climb on board this,
Google idea. Everyday Batman. There's your sample. Just picture the Predator instead. Hey, all you listeners, you didn't hear any of that.
don't steal our wicked idea.
Copyright Everyday Predator. That makes it legal, right?
I think so.
It's sweet. Covered.
Yeah. So watching the stream, it's okay.
Real quick on the TV front, did anyone else? This is a true story, by the way. That they're making a TV version of Snatch now.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I did not hear that.
The kid, the redheaded kid from the Harry Potter movies, is going to play the main character.
Double ugh.
It's set in the universe. I hate this so much. It's set in the universe of Snatch, but nobody from the movie is even referenced in the show.
What's it going to be about?
I have no idea.
So they're calling it Snatch because that's what got the TV executives to say yes to it.
I guess.
Yeah, but that movie, as awesome as that movie is, was not popular.
Not at the time, no. I mean, it's got a cult following now, but I just feel like eventually every movie is going to be a TV series and a web series.
Why is it so hard to have an original idea? Jesus Christ.
I just think, why can't things sometimes just be one and done?
Right?
I don't know.
Well, that and they're doing the Rocky Horror Picture Show TV show now, too.
I think that's just a remake, and I think it's just an event thing.
Oh, I thought it was a show.
No, I don't think so. Because that Laverne Cox is the star, and she's already signed on to another show starting in January. Still. And she's still going to be doing Orange is the New Black, so I don't think she's going to be doing three full-time shows.
Not with that attitude.
Man, they have cracked the code on what infants American public is, because that it shows how little they respect people now to be doing shit like that. I mean, I hear that Snatch is a TV show, or they're doing any of these remakes, reboots, whatever. Like, we used to make fun of it 10 years ago. We were laughing because all these the Dukes of Hazzard was becoming they're rebooting that as a movie with Johnny Knoxville or something. Like, we laughed at it then. Now it's to the point where this is just getting insulting. And there's things that I would probably be fine, whatever, I'm super on board. In fact, I spent last night talking with a friend, and one of the things I'd asked is, I was like, what comic book properties do you think would make a better TV show than a movie? Just a random, bar question, asking. And we had a really good conversation. But I was thinking, I'm part of that problem, because I would totally be on board with any adaptation, regardless. And then I hear about this, the Snatch thing, and I'm just like, oh, but it's the same fucking thing. It's the same, lack of creativity and originality that that causes fear. I mean, you have a movie like Swiss Army Man, which is one of the most insanely original ideas ever, that maybe I didn't get a chance to see it, maybe it was really good, I heard it was really good, but I mean, not enough people saw that for people to be like, yeah, we gotta start doing real cool original things. So that movie The Lobster, I just watched this movie on Netflix called Upstream Color. It was fantastic. Beautiful and weird and tragic and sad and hard to follow and great. I've been watching some really original stuff, and then I hear about those things, and part of me is just like, a Snatch TV show, I will fucking watch that with both hands. And then the other part of me is like, why will I do that? Why am I enabling these assholes, these fucking cowardly fucking people who won't greenlight anything because they have no vision, because it's just our entire every corporation is just being run by these terrified people who are just waiting for the dumb decision they make that gets them fired. So it's just like, what's the safest decision I can make today?
Yeah, but the problem is, even when they do get fired, they leave with like a $200 million pension.
Mm-hmm. I think you're thinking of like the CEOs of these companies, not necessarily the people in the boardroom making the scheduling decisions.
Scheduling and greenlighting shows are two different things, I think.
But
not really.
But I mean, even though, I mean, I don't think there's enough punishment or probably even enough reward, really.
Yeah.
To correct the behavior, because I mean, you do probably have these like under executives who are hearing pitches. Because I'm sure there's pitches all the time. There's probably a million creative people in this country who are constantly trying to pitch something, and it doesn't get past that first level executive who does the, oh, I'm going to have to hard pass, but I think it's a great idea.
Right.
You know, then, I mean, that I saw a show that just mocked this the other day where, like, these people are pitching a show to a guy, and he's like, oh, I'm going to have to pass, but it's really great. And they go to another place. And that guy is the assistant getting them water. He's like, didn't I see you guys? And then later they go to another place and he's their waiter. Like, and I think that happens, not exactly that, but that can happen. But I feel like a lot of times these people also, nothing bad happens to them. Nothing really bad happens in the way where, like, you'll never work in this town again because you passed on The Walking Dead, like someone at HBO had done. It's like, oh, you passed on The Walking Dead? Well, here's a promotion at our subsidiary. Take that, you know?
Yeah.
So.
That's it. You're off of Fox. You're down to FX. Oh, that's better anyway. Yeah, exactly. You know?
I just feel like all the bad ideas are coming out of, like, Fox, NBC, ABC, and CBS.
Well, because, like, they know they can't get away with the stuff that the cable companies can.
The interesting ideas are all, like, at the lower levels.
Right, because they can get away with more.
Not that they can get away with more, they have time to let a show kind of gestate. Because actually I was reading that Fargo is pretty bad as far as ratings go, but the critical acclaim plus the awards equals it's going to stay on for a while.
Yeah, they had that problem with Hannibal. Apparently Hannibal had abysmal ratings, but people loved it so much that it got a second season, but they just couldn't justify a third season because it was just, its ratings were so horrible. And, you know, then everyone's like, well, you know, it should have never been on NBC. And, you know, I mean, part of me is like, yeah, of course it shouldn't. No one would think that would be a good idea.
Right.
Yet there it was, you know, because someone at NBC thought, we could give this a try. It's a reboot of Hannibal, of the Hannibal character from all these movies that people loved. So, well, I mean, I'm a sucker for nostalgia. I fucking love it. Like, I think about it all the time. And, you know, these people definitely have my number when it comes to a lot of stuff. Like when that, you know, Indiana Jones movie came out and I knew it was going to be sucky, you know, part of me, I maybe mentioned this before, but part of me had said, like, you know, I'm going to see it though, because I asked for this. You know, somewhere in my brain, I was probably with a friend one night and I was like, oh, they should do another Indiana Jones, man. They should just do one. Like, fuck it. He's older. Who cares? Like, I mean, Alan Quartermain, you know, in those fucking League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, is like 80 years old. Like, they could totally keep doing them. And then they did one. I was like, oh, damn it. Why'd they listen to me?
So, why listen to me? I don't know anything.
Yeah.
This is going to be horrible, and I deserve this.
Yeah, if I'd known, I would have greenlit that movie. Like, I clearly don't know anything.
Are we talking about the Crystal Skull?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. That was definitely a bad movie. I mean, I saw it in a theater. I have the DVD, but I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah, so that was a movie that there's moments in that movie that I was like, oh, see, this is what I'd hoped for. And then other movies where I was like, no, why?
Well, what killed it for me was like the whole alien aspect.
Oh, my God. No, you lost me.
Yeah, like the first two were all like, they had a little bit of the weird stuff, but this one just was like completely off the wall.
You know, I heard the reasoning for why that was, and I found that interesting, but it still didn't work for me.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear his justification for doing it?
Always.
Okay, so the original Indiana Jones were based off the, like, the pulps and the serials from, like, 1930s.
Right.
And so all of the kind of, like, fantasy that surrounded those first Indiana Jones were sort of based off that, you know, 30s, 40s kind of thing. So when they came back to kind of revisit Indiana Jones' world, they went with the same kind of stories that were popular 20 years after those pulps were popular. So that's why you get aliens and that kind of stuff. Aliens in the Congo is because, like, the post World War II sort of combination of jungle adventure meets like alien abduction thing was getting really popular in the world of sci-fi and pulps and stuff. So that's why they decided to go that way. So Indiana Jones is less of a story about a character that lives in a certain world. He's more of a send-up of what was popular, you know, exactly 40 years prior to when the movie that we are seeing is released.
I want to go ahead and say ill right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things that, like I said, I heard that and I was like, oh, okay, like I get that. That's interesting. But that is kind of the overthinking that does not work for me, because that doesn't translate in a way that I understand. Had I known that initially about the first one, if that was like super plain about the first ones, then I would have been on board with them. I'm like, yeah, you know, you're making the movie. It's working in my head before I even see it. Like, I'm already geared up. Like, the pump is primed. But this time it was like, what the hell is going on?
You know, and here's the thing. Like, the more you sit here and think about it, it's like, I'll totally believe the voodoo guys who can magically rip a heart out of a guy's chest, but aliens, like, all right, you've gone too fucking far now.
And it's funny, because aliens actually don't, there's nothing outside our realm of physics that make aliens impossible.
Right.
But everything on the other Indiana Jones, like the magic arc and removing a heart magically and all this, and the Holy Grail, all that stuff is totally outside the realm of possibility.
Yeah, and that's... Like, you would think that would bug me a lot, but it really doesn't. Because just, like, when you throw aliens into the mix, I'm just like, oh, you're Jesus Christ. What the fuck? That's not possible.
Well, I think the other problem is you're throwing aliens into the mix of a property we've already been dealing with magic. It's like, you know, my friend was saying, like, those Jurassic Park movies should be more realistic, because dinosaurs should be the biggest piece of shit you have to swallow. like there should be... Like, in every fantasy property, there's always, like, one thing that's ridiculous. And that should be the one thing that we have to deal with. You know, like, with Walking Dead, it's, like, it's literally the title of the show. Yeah. The Walking Dead, like, everything else should be absolutely realistic. So when Carol and Daryl flip over in a van and it flips in a way that everyone in the world knows is not possible, like, that's a huge, like, oh, fuck, that hurts, because... You know, it would take, like, 2 seconds of research to realize that's not a good way to do this. And you can't just be like, oh, but the show's got zombies in it, so don't worry about it. Like, no, that's... We aren't worrying about the zombies. We're not questioning that part.
Yeah.
We're on board with you all the way, but everything else becomes ridiculous at the point. So, yeah, when you have a property like Indiana Jones, which is... We've had magic and gods for three movies, and now you're going to also throw in that... It's like they should just do another Indiana Jones where it turns out he's a robot. Like, why not? Like, you know, like, okay, sure. Or like, you know, suddenly the Terminator walks in and is like, Indiana Jones, you are going to die. And like, oh my God, this is...
Come with me if you want to live.
And the justification for that can't be like, well, you guys were cool with the magic and the god stuff, so I don't know what you're complaining about. It's
right.
Like, I'm not complaining, you know. You built a world. You can't just add to the world in another crazy way. So
yeah,
or maybe you can,
and maybe it's awesome. Maybe you're making the next Buckaroo Banzai, and it's just fucking bananas the entire time. I don't know if you guys remember that movie.
No,
I'm familiar, but I've not seen it. Now I feel like I need to see it.
It's super crazy. John Lithgow, I think, is the bad guy. It's been a long time since I saw it, but it was a lot of fun when I was a kid. I'm sure it has not aged well. I want to say there's, like, electric guitars involved.
I don't know. I think I'm going to have to put it on my rental list or my find it list or something. I've been so bad with movies, though, lately. Yeah, we have rambled for a while.
Yeah, when the conversation goes.
No, I know. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying. I thought our fourth would have chimed in by now, but...
Yeah, I was kind of waiting for... Is Chris there? Is he just not saying anything?
No, I haven't heard a word. So, I mean, do we number one it up?
Yeah,
sure.
I think we probably can.
All right, well, this was Damien's forced pick for the week, so do you want to bring us on in?
Sure, you should say what it is and who did it, because I can't remember the name of the artist.
All righty, it is Black Monday Murders on Image Comics by Jonathan Hickman and Tom Coker.
Yes, that's Coker? It, Tom Coker.
Okay, I wasn't sure if I was pronouncing that right. I don't want to sound like an idiot, more so than I already do.
Yeah, no, that was a good pick. I, as the listeners don't know, but I had been like, oh shit, I don't know what we should pick, and Chris suggested that. So, and I'm glad he did, because I had actually forgot that I had it already and I'd read it already. Yeah, so let's see. So Black Monday Murders, Jonathan Hickman property, whose stuff I sometimes really like. Like, I love East to West. I love a lot of stuff, but I didn't love Red Mass from Mars. But anyway, so he can be kind of a little hit or miss for me, but I thought this was interesting for him. So I'd describe it as kind of a Seven-esque murder mystery that deals with a group of financial, like sort of almost like a financial cult that seems to have been ruling the world for some time, using some really elaborate pecking orders that lead to lots of death and mayhem, and sort of seem to be, what's the word I'm looking for, kind of manipulating the world markets and manipulating the world itself, all to serve this god, Mammon. It's kind of got a Lovecraftian sort of vibe, I'd say, so maybe like a Lovecraft-ish sort of thing, but not, meets like Seven. So kind of seems like it has a few characters, follows this Detective Dumas, I remember his name because of the Three Musketeers, and follows this kind of detective, seems kind of like a Sherlock Holmes sort of guy, kind of in touch with things that other people aren't quite seeing, and really cool to, and it's totally happy to deal with really messed up scenes, and they bring him in to investigate this really elaborate sort of ritualistic murder, and that's kind of how the story starts, if that makes sense.
No, that's pretty much the baseline synopsis of it, outside of getting into, you know, specific details and plot spoilers and whatnot. That was a really elaborate way to say nailed it.
Nerd. I don't know. What'd you guys think? Because there's part of me that really, really loved this, and there's part of me that kind of had some reservations, so...
Well, what I like the most, and this is a very, very thick book with a lot of information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a mini graphic novel, really.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't research every possible, you know, factoid, because they kept, like, every couple of pages, there's a couple of pages of just straight up information about, you know, the market crashes in the past, and they've all happened, the majority of them have happened in October, and... all kinds of like weird statistics about the market that kind of follow his story, which makes you wonder how much of it is actually true. But I didn't know what to expect. I had no idea what this was about when I grabbed it, but it just looked neat, and I was kind of blown away with how much thought they put into one issue for this.
Well, I can think of zero things of Jonathan Hickman's that I don't like, but I mean, again, there are things I like better than others. I actually like Red Mass from Mars. I thought that was pretty good.
Did you? Yeah,
I did.
The guy who loaned it to me, he loved it, so I read it. I was like, yeah, it's okay. I'd read East to West all at the same time, and I was like, oh, I really love East to West. I picked up that, and I was like, yeah, it's okay. Feels kind of like I've read it before, but
yeah, it's not my favorite of his, but. It's actually my least favorite thing is the third volume of the Manhattan Projects, because I think that thing just gets so off the rails.
Oh, I've only read the first, and I liked it, but I didn't. I said more read the first one.
You're in for a ride now.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
And it might be because there's just such a long gap between Volume 2 and Volume 3 for me that I was just like, wait, what happened before? I don't remember any of this. Who's the guy with the mustache? But yeah, the factoids that you mentioned, like you said, all these market... I don't know.
Statistics.
We'll call them irregularities. All happen in and or around Halloween, sort of, or like during this right before the winter solstice. I don't know how true that is, but as I've stated before, I used to read a lot of that conspiratorial type stuff and a lot of stuff about the banking families and the Rothschilds and the
Morgans.
The Morgans, the. Who's the. The Rockefellers, they're not really necessarily a banking family, but I used to read all that stuff, and all these people like would link all these ancient cults and satanic rituals to these super rich banking families, and that stuff was like really disturbing and fascinating. I was like, man, if this stuff is true, this is crazy, and then like my rational side would kick in and be like, but this stuff is, you know, not real, you know, monsters don't exist, so I mean, but... It just reminded me, there was this video, don't know if you remember that group. I think they were called We Are Change. It was right around 2008. They were real big into, they were like these young guys from like New York City. They were real big into like the whole exposing the New World Order and, you know, we're going to out everybody and we're gonna expose the truth about 9/11 and all stuff. And I remember there was one particular video. I don't know why they were in London, or unless, I forget what Rothschild member was like prominent, or I don't really know who the family members are, but one of the Rothschilds members is coming out of like this black tie event, and one of these guys in the with the video camera like rushed up to him and like basically started screaming at him like, "You will not have your New World Order. You will not have your one world government." And like the look of complete the lack of interest or the lack of any sort of emotion on this Rothschild, like he's like, "Yes, yes, that's fine, that's great, wonderful, you'll blah blah blah," and he's just completely dismissive. And I just remember watching this video going, this guy is so rich and so powerful, he could give a fuck what anybody says, thinks, or does in his presence. Like, he just with a wave of his hand, 40 guys with guns will just shoot you for even like breathing the same air as him. And I thought that was just so eerie and weird. And I couldn't get that video out of my head reading this, because I'm reading this thing like intently, like going, is that guy real? And I'm like, I'm Googling all these names as I'm reading this. Is Murray Rothschild, is that a real guy? Turns out they're all fake. But I literally am Googling things. I'm like, is this fucking real? I mean, what the fuck? That book gave me like the willies. Because I kept thinking, I'm like, this story is obviously rooted in the occult and aliens and, you know, shit that ain't necessarily real. But a lot of these people that believe these, like banking families and the one world government and the Illuminati and the pyramids and all this stuff, they take this shit deadly serious. Mm-hmm. And all I kept thinking was, man, if this shit was actual, that's fucking crazy. But then, like, there are people that do, and, like, they spend their entire days and lives researching this stuff. To what end, I have no idea, but I don't know, like, this book, like, really just pulled me back into that sphere of, like, circular logic. Mm-hmm. Plus, and then when you factor in all, like, the creepy horror vibes and stuff, I'm picturing this as a movie or a TV series going, this could easily be the best horror property around if somebody adapted it correctly.
Yeah, this could, once Game of Thrones is over, this could take its place.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, I love Jonathan Hickman's work for this reason, because he does really get deep with, even if the stuff is ridiculous or he doesn't necessarily believe himself, he just digs so deep into these theories and injects actual statistics alongside of it all to where you believe it. Like, you're reading this thing and you're going, man, I'm buying every bit of this, even though it, like, on the surface it looks like complete, you know, fantasy bullshit. Like, I'm buying this. If somebody handed me this and said, here's this pamphlet, this is what's going on in the world, I'm like, oh my god, you're right, we gotta do something.
Well, it's funny, because one of my problems I sort of had with the whole thing was that it got me to think that way, because that's how I used to be too.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Like, yeah, what? And I don't think it's a bad thing. It just, I remember being like, oh, you know, I used to be much less skeptical, and I would totally have been like all about this as being totally gospel. Real.
Oh, yeah, 10 years ago, if somebody gave this to me, I'd be like, have you guys seen this pamphlet? You gotta read this. This is fucking what's really going on.
Yeah, someone cracked the code. Yeah.
Like, we gotta find these people and expose them. We gotta chase them around. Like, now I'm just like, ah, dude, even if this actually was real, and I don't think it is, I'm just too lazy, and I like brownies, so forget it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I thought the story was awesome. It just, yeah, like, what it did to me, it kind of plucked these strings that reminded me of kind of how, like, naive I used to be, and how I used to be just so willing to believe anything that was not, you know, that was, like, what they didn't want you to know, like, whoever they are. So it had nothing to do with the story, really, but I read it, and I was like, oh, God, it makes me feel like I'm 18 again, like, and not in a good way, like... Like, well, after I read this, I'm gonna call an ex-girlfriend and tell her how we should be together or some bullshit like that.
Well, here's the thing. Right now, you know there's somebody sitting in their car listening to this, shaking their fist, going, but it is real!
Yeah, but that's the thing. Is like, And it could be. It could totally be real. I'm not putting in that. I'm not making any sort of assumption that it's impossible. But, I mean, the time to believe something is real is after it's been demonstrated to be real. And it's,
right.
You know, your assumption is not evidence.
Right.
And I had to learn that a long time ago. It's like, I mean, because then someone saying that, you know, Jesus is real is just as valid as saying that, like, the Rothschilds own mind control rays that, you know, changed my mind because I was getting too close, you know, whatever. You know, it's like you can just make up whatever you want, and that is exactly as valid as any of these conspiratorial things, which again might turn out to be true. In fact, even if it is true, it's still irrational to believe it until it's been demonstrated to be true. Like,
yeah,
you know, there was that whole idea of like the government's bugging our phones, listening to all our phone conversations and stuff, and I'd be like, yeah, right, whatever, you fucking weirdo. Turns out that's not exactly untrue. But if you believed it before it was demonstrated to be true, even though it was true, you were irrational. Like, yeah. Just because your guess does, you know, just because in the first 2 minutes of watching The Sixth Sense, you guessed that Bruce Willis was dead the whole time, that doesn't make you somehow smarter than the person who waited till the end of the movie to find out the truth. That just means you happen to guess right.
Right.
You know, so it's, you know, essentially without evidence, it's irrational to believe something that hasn't been proven, demonstrated to be true. You know, so.
This is true.
I guess that's where I started. So reading this, and actually this happened with The Strain a little bit this week as I started watching that, and something else I watched. I realized, like, in a lot of the fiction I really love is Stranger Things. A lot of the fiction that I love, the most skeptical people are the people you're like, come on, get with it. There are totally vampires. Like, you know, you should believe this. Oh, the old man with the sword, do whatever he says. Like, you would never do this stuff in real life, and I would never do this stuff in real life, but every time I watch one of these shows, it's like, horror has taught me, like, one thing is, like, whatever the craziest person in your neighborhood says, he is right. 100% believe him. But, you know, if I walk down the street today and the guy was like, you know, quick, stab me in the belly so I can get the, you know, so I can get the eels to come out or something, I'd be like, no, I'm not going to do that. Although, if it was a movie, I would totally have to do it, because that would, whatever he says is probably the right thing. When your ex-husband tells you to run from the city because there's a horrible plague and it's going to kill you and your whole family, you can't be like, you're crazy. That's a silly thing to say. Come on, you're scaring the kids. You should get out of here. I'm going to call the police. Like, you know, and then we look at those characters in these shows or comics or whatever, like, oh, that character's so stupid. It's like, no, that character's actually completely rational. And that is the way you should always react in these situations, except this one time.
Right. I just, the thing...
Because of dramatic irony.
Right. The thing about this book that I found kind of neat was it seems like a lot of his books, they start out and they're built around these giant fantastical ideas of superheroes or robots or dual personalities coming through a portal and, you know, weird alien samurai things. This is the first book that feels like a real world with weird stuff put into it.
Yeah.
As opposed to a weird world where there's some, like, actual ideas or philosophical concepts put in into the crevices. It's kind of interesting how that worked out. Plus, another thing too is back to the whole conspiracy thing that has kind of thrown me a little bit when I thought about it of recent, just seeing a few things on the internet, is if there's these all-powerful beings that control the families, that control the world, if they have all this power, why are they, like, hiding in the center of the earth and not coming out? Because, oh my god, the sun. That has nothing to do with anything. I just wanted to throw that out there, so I sounded mildly, like, interesting for a second. And somebody listened to that and go, well, I am done. Click.
Yeah, well, it's valid to ask those sort of questions. I mean, it's, you know, what is the motivation of these beings? I mean, some, you know, the movie Cabin in the Woods, have you guys seen all that? Both seen that?
No.
Maybe. Oh, okay.
I was thinking Cabin Fever for a second. I'm like, the one with the rabbit? Yeah, I saw that.
Okay, well, I won't spoil the end, because it's actually a lot of fun. It's real goofy, but I was a little freaked out by it, because sometimes I'm scared of scary movies. I'm not ashamed to admit that.
How dare you be honest? Oh my god.
I know. So I was freaked out to watch it. I wasn't freaked out when I was watching it, because once I watched it, I was like, oh, this is like a funny movie. Okay, gotcha. But the ending kind of speaks to this, so I won't give that away, because it is fun. But you know, sometimes it has, there's some movies or stories or whatever where just the idea of, like, human misery is enough for these things. The Strain kind of deals with this a little bit. It's like human misery somehow, like, feeds these things. Or have you ever read the book of Carrion Comfort?
No.
I'd recommend it. It's actually really great. It's a horror book, and it deals with essentially psychic vampires.
Nice.
These characters, it's right off the bat, so I'm not really giving anything away. These characters that can kind of can control people and make them do things, and human misery and death and violence is what literally, like, sustains them, like, gives them back their youth. So, like, the Holocaust, you know, was really great for them. So they got to, like, integrate themselves into German society and just be around death and misery. And, like, just being around it was enough for them to, like, feed and be young and, you know, stay young. But aside from that, they're actually almost totally normal people.
Hmm.
Like, they go on vacations, and they're not, like, they're, you know, they can't, not like they get hurt in the sunlight, but they just need to, like, be causing this misery. And it's this really long, elaborate kind of adventure novel, like adventure horror novel, that I'd absolutely recommend. But it comes from that same sort of idea of, like, why would these things be behind all this horror? And it's like, oh, because it actually literally feeds them.
How old is this book?
I'm not sure. I think I read it about 10 years ago. I read it, I think. So it's a little older than that, at least. I can't remember the name of the author. It'll come to me in a second. He did another book that you may have read. It has a really funny name. Never mind. Cut that part out.
Nope. You're going to be embarrassed for the whole country.
Oh, okay. The name Robert Ludlum keeps coming in my head. I was like, well, that's not him. So, anyway, Carrying Comfort. It's great.
All right, so Black Monday Murders. Shall we number?
Sure. Yeah.
Well, why don't you go ahead first?
It's Dan Simmons, by the way.
That it is. 636 pages of pure science fiction horror goodness.
Yeah, presumably. I really recommend it.
I will have to add that.
It's a long read. I'm not going to lie, and it's a little bit of a slow burn, but at about a page 100, something happens that is so fucking awesome that I think about it all the time. But anyway, yes, I will number. I liked it. I mean, I liked that it made me, you know, address who I had been and what I was. And just as a book, art is awesome. It's a little stiff, but that's me nitpicking at what is essentially awesome. Like, I mean, the characters didn't have a lot of life to them, but I almost feel like that was a choice. It almost, you know, they had a statuesque quality to it. And there was so much black thrown into that art that I love that. I love when an artist is just totally, you know, fearless with putting black on there, like just black all over the face, black in the background, black all over the clothes, where it's like Mignola turned up, you know, to, it almost had like Sean Phillips with, drawn entirely with those Magnum 44s we used to X up with back in the day.
X up with. Right. I never
heard. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh yeah. Yep. Big time.
Yeah. So, so I'm going to give it a 9. I dug it. I'm definitely going to read more. It's definitely the Hickman project that I'm been the most excited about, so, in a while. And so far, so good. I mean, I've really loved a lot of his stuff, and some of his other stuff I've been kind of like, it's okay. So this is high on my list so far.
Well, I'd have to say, I mean, I haven't read a ton of Hickman, but the last one we did on the show was The Dying and the Dead, and that was awesome. It went a whole 3 issues before it just fell off the face of the planet, and but it was an awesome story, and I gave the number, what, a 10. I'm equally, if not more, interested in this, and seeing as it's just so jam-packed with goodness, I haven't given a 10 in a while. Let's give it a 10.
Yeah, I'm going to say I've read quite a bit of Jonathan Hickman, and I can easily say that right now, as it stands, this is my favorite thing he's ever done. It's just so dark and just disturbing, and like I said, it just made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. Plus the genius, I think, of him is in the back of all his trades he puts his website address, that Pronia. So I always would go there to look and see, like, what does this guy actually believe? Because I can never tell. Is he, like, super far to the left? Is he, like, Alex Jones? Like, what is this guy about? And he doesn't tell you anything. So, like, you have no idea, unless you know him personally, like, what his actual beliefs are. Which I think is amazing, because I feel like he's like this weird guy that lives in a cave and he writes these books and Like, he only makes, like, random appearances, like, three times a year, and he's always in a cloak or something, even though I've seen pictures of him. I just feel like he's got this super mysterious persona, and his stuff is always so, like you said, thought-provoking, and, like, I'm like I said, I literally was Googling things as I'm reading, going, that's not a real guy. So, yeah, 10. I'm going to give it a 10.
Sweet. All right, one more time for the morons out there that wasn't writing anything down. What was the name of that stupid book?
Carrying Comfort by Dan Simmons.
C-A-R-R-I-O-N, not carrying.
Oh, yeah, carrying like meat. Like something crows would eat.
All right. Well, I mean, I'm just gonna skip straight to page 100. But, I mean, you know, I gotta see what, what all the fuss is about. As I have mentioned earlier, our over-under for the week is, you know, keeping in theme with the number one, we're going to do, like, murder mysteries. Overrated. I'm sure people out there will scream. I'm sure, I don't know about people here. I don't think anyone will really care. But I remember seeing it once, maybe twice, and I was completely underwhelmed. Overrated, Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, okay.
I will second that. That movie was not good. Actually, the movie Manhunter, was that the original?
That's the first one by Michael Mann.
That one also was not really my favorite thing ever.
I saw that one way after I saw Silence of the Lambs. I like Silence of the Lambs, I will say. I don't think I hold it in such high regard as maybe many people do. In fact, part of the reason I like it so much, and this is probably not something they intended, but after time had gone by, I started watching that show Monk.
I used to watch that on occasion.
Yeah, and the police captain is Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs. And it made me enjoy Monk so much more to think of him, because his voice, I can't do an impression of him, but I wish I could.
I think you should try.
He's a great big freight person. Like that kind of... that way he talks. You know, that's how he talks all the way through Monk. So every time I watch Monk, I go, oh, God, I love Buffalo Bill in this show. So to me, he was such a star, like, kind of after the fact, that it's made me enjoy Silence of the Lambs a lot more. But I will totally agree that that movie does not belong on the level in which it is held. Not that I think there's anything necessarily wrong with it. There's just so much else stuff out there that is better than that. And then Manhunter, yeah, that just didn't, I just don't think that aged super well. Like I saw that after the fact, but I watched it again a few years ago because I really like Dennis Farina.
Yeah, I like him.
And yeah, and he's great. He's great in it because he's great in everything he does. Probably Orders Breakfast awesome. You know, I just like that guy. And it's just, I don't know, it's kind of boring, honestly.
I just remember. I just remember when it came out on DVD, I bought it because I was like, oh my God, if I'm going to start, I'm going to start at the beginning. And I remember watching it going, I thought this was supposed to be like super disgusting and brutal. This movie is super boring.
For the time, it might have been super disgusting and brutal, but, you know, fast forward 20 years and things right now that we're like, oh, geez, they're going to be like, that's nothing.
You could still have a good story. I didn't feel like Manhunter was a good story.
Mm.
There was like enough, like way more fucked up stuff had happened in real life by that point too. Like we'd already had Henry Lee Lucas and John Wayne Gacy and Otis O'Toole, and I mean even that book, The Devil of White City, about the World's Fair in like 1880 or something like that.
That book was so boring.
Was it boring? I never read it, but I know all about but I know most about the guy who
H.H. Holmes.
That built that crazy house for killing people.
Like, when they're talking about him in the book, it is very interesting, but the majority of the book follows around the two main architects for the World's Fair and how they're going to build all these buildings.
I'd have to read it. I know a lot of people
Finish it. Like, I got through, like, two-thirds of the book. I'm like, I just can't do it anymore. Hmm. The majority of the book, they don't even talk about the devil in the White City. They talk more about the White City itself. It's kind of annoying.
Interesting.
And that's your guys' town, right?
Oh, yes, yeah. Correct. Interesting. Yeah. I was going to say, interesting fact about H.H. Holmes. Not to get too deep into it, but the neighborhood is not, like, it's kind of a rough area at this point. 63rd and Halsted, or is it 67th and Halsted? It's been ravaged by poverty and a lot of businesses left and so on and so forth. And clearly that house, or that building, has been through many iterations, and they never last because people, I mean, I don't believe in ghosts, but people claim they can hear screaming in the walls. I don't know if that's true or not. Never been there. It's a post office now, but apparently people still hear weird things, so it could just be because you know where you're at. You're putting those thoughts in your head. But Scott and I grew up what is ostensibly a bike ride away from there.
Nice.
Yeah. So, in theory, he and I could have easily went skateboarding past that house at some point. Although I would have never known. I didn't know that place existed until I was in my 30s, so...
It's too bad they didn't keep the house as is, just for, like, posterity, just because I'd be interested to see. But, I mean, I can understand why they didn't, because that's fucking macabre as fuck.
Yeah, and apparently when that building existed, that neighborhood was, like, the crown jewel of the city. Like, that was where rich people lived. Rich people flocked to that area, which is now, you know, like I said, it's a pretty dangerous area. But at the time, it was, like, you know, top hats and spats and... You know, cufflinks and twirly mustaches. So, not anymore, though.
So that'd be cool if it was a super rough neighborhood today, but that's still what everyone wore there.
I would move there tomorrow.
Like people had duels outside with white gloves.
Yeah. Dude, I just want to wear the cool top hat with the curly mustache. That's really what it boils down
to. Somebody does need to bring that back. I know that Professor Elemental guy kind of does, but I think... There needs to be like a movement of mustaches and canes and monocles.
I'll get right on it.
Interesting little side note, though, if anyone really cares, the only building left standing from the World's Fair, and this is actually goes all the way back to the 1893 World's Fair, what at the time was the Palace of Fine Arts, it's the only building still standing, is the Museum of Science and Industry. Pow.
I believe that entire neighborhood was built for the World's Fair, though.
It was. But most of those buildings were built as temporary structures, and they were ripped down right away afterwards. That's the only building still standing. And it was called the White City because everything was covered in white paint because it was just the most available at the time. Huh. Interesting fun fact.
I love fun facts like that.
Well, here's a personal fun fact. Science and Industry is probably my favorite museum.
They did do Wordless, so that was pretty good.
They also did Body World twice. I went twice. I'm sure they've done it more since then, but...
Oh, they did Wordless one night only, and I found out about it 6 months after the fact.
Well, you are the worst.
In case anyone's curious, Wordless was Art Spiegelman's jazz tribute to comics without words.
Neat.
So it was like his little jazz music presentation thingy, and... It was a one-night-only event, and it sold out, and it was never heard from again. And this they did it in other cities, but not here. Anyway, my overrated pick is the book House Dick by E. Howard Hunt.
I've not heard that.
I've talked about this many times, but the publisher Hard Case Crime, the guy that started it was the guy that owned Juno, and then when he sold Juno, he made so much money. He decided to start his own book publishing company, and his favorite thing is old detective novels and old pulp magazines, so he started a publisher called Hard Case Crime. He bought the rights to all these old books that had gone out of print, and he's also published like current ones as well, but all these old Michael Crichton novels that were written before he was Michael Crichton, so he wrote all these crime, like porn pulp novels that he wrote under different names, and E. Howard Hunt wrote one called House Dick, and it was pre-Watergate, so before he went to prison. Because
oh, okay.
E. Howard Hunt apparently was heavily involved in the Nixon administration's Watergate doings, which ended up upending his career, both politically and as a writer. And this book, I thought, would be amazing, because I'm like, oh, that guy was involved in Watergate, this book has to be crazy. And it was super boring.
Ah, too bad.
So, it's the only Hard Case Crime novel I have sold back to Half Price Books. I'm sure I got about 11 cents for it. So, if you see it, pass on House Dick.
I'm into it. I'm into passing on it, I mean.
Mine was way less exciting than yours. That's for sure.
What can I say?
I don't know. Okay.
I was going to say, what can I say? I'm pretty awesome sometimes.
Mine, I don't know if it is technically a murder mystery. I guess it is. It's kind of low-hanging fruit, though. I think I picked an easy one. I went with The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Really?
Ooh, mm-hmm. Scott's going to be upset.
Ooh. Well, are we talking movie or book? And, you know...
You know what? We're going to talk movie, because I never saw the... I never read
which, the book. Now, which movie? There's two of them.
Both.
Really?
Yeah. I thought it was okay. I thought it was all stuff I'd kind of seen before. So
I read the first two books, and then I saw the movie, and I was actually surprised at like how close the movie followed the book. Mm-hmm. But I did. I really enjoyed the book, not going
to
lie.
So now you know you don't have to read it.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, I didn't hate it. I just think I was trying to figure out, honestly, I went through a list of like some of the most popular murder mysteries of all time, and I figured out which one I was like, meh, about, and that was the one. I didn't hate the I saw the, you know, the original movie first. And I was like, yeah, it's okay. I mean, I was like, ah, felt like I've kind of seen this stuff before. And then the other movie I watched, I feel like I didn't watch it very closely. Honestly, it might be one of those things where I watched it and I thought it was shot beautifully. I thought it looked better than the original movie. And I like the actors a lot, but then it's like, well, now I've seen this. Like, I don't know why I decided this is what I was going to do.
Right, right.
So I guess I just didn't really stick with me. So yeah, I mean, I didn't, you know, think they're particularly bad, but I'm going to go overrated just because I just think where it stands on its list of bestsellers is, and I don't know if that necessarily makes something highly rated just because people liked it. You know what I mean? And people like The Apprentice. Doesn't mean it's a highly rated show. Yeah. But that's I that was the metric I went with. Like, what's really popular, and what was I sort of nonplussed about? So.
You know, actually, back to The Apprentice for a moment, two things stand out about that is, A, before we went on, I was watching an interview with Penn Jillette, and he talked at length about his meetings with Donald Trump and his time on The Apprentice, and he kind of broke down how the show was actually put together. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting how, well, just for one thing, I guess one of the seasons it came down to him and some country singer that I can't remember, but the network or the production company had called Penn Jillette independent of the show and said, would you publicly throw your support behind Donald Trump if he were to ever run for president? And he said, I think Donald's a nice guy. I think he's fairly good at what he does, but there is no way I would ever support him for president because we disagree on everything. And they go, yeah, but you really need to say that you would support. And they kept going back and forth, and they basically told him, if you don't say you would support him for president, you will lose, even though you have the most votes or however it works. He's like, oh, yeah, it's fine. He goes, I'm just not going to do it, though. So the country singer ended up winning, and however it ended up happening, I don't know, whatever the end result was. But also, I was listening to Joe Rogan's podcast, and he was talking about The Apprentice, and he was asked to be on one season, and he went to the tryouts or the auditions or whatever, and he explained that you film all your fired parts before the season even begins. So totally. That way, if Donald Trump fires you, he's not actually firing you. He's just pointing at the camera and saying all this belligerent stuff. And they make you go through a litany of reactions so they can just cut it to make it look like he's berating you at this table. When in actuality, you never sit there with him. So I thought that was pretty hilarious. That this guy who's going around saying he's going to, like, you know, wall us off and kill all the Muslims, like, won't even fire people to their face because I guess he's afraid to do it. So small hands, doesn't want to fire Joe Rogan. This guy's the worst.
Yeah. Hands are small, though.
They're a little weird. And he likes to touch his daughter's butt on TV, which is super weird.
What?
Yeah, I saw that. It's super gross.
Yeah, I was just like, did he just touch her butt? I was like, super weird. But then again, a week later, I heard him, you know, do the Second Amendment thing, and I was just like, oh, he just said that, like, for real. Like an hour ago. Because they were
Yeah, every day it's something new, so it's hard to almost remember the last crazy shit he did.
Actually, I feel like it's been a little bit, because I feel like they've really kind of, like, told him, don't talk anymore. You're ruining this. Anyway, no more Trump for right now.
Sweet. Okay, underrated murder mystery. This might sound a little weird, but when I really sit back and think about it, it was a little bit of a shocker when I first saw it. Mind you, I was a kid, but whatever. Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Okay, cool. That's a cool choice.
Right? I still, to this day, thoroughly enjoy that movie. I think the whole animation aspect of it was done really well for its time.
No, it definitely was.
And, you know, when you see what's-his-face with the rubber gloves and he's killing the cartoons and then he's a cartoon himself, like, what? No one expected that.
Christopher Lloyd. Yeah,
that's true. That was some fucking Chinatown shit for us as kids. I mean,
Ooh, Chinatown. I need to watch that again.
Oh, it's so good.
You know what's interesting about Roger Rabbit, too, is when my nephew was like 3, we'll say, we had it on, and it was the end when, like, Christopher Lloyd was like, his eyes were bugging out, and he was going all crazy and stuff. And my nephew had this look on his face, like he was glued to the TV, but also terrified of everything he was seeing. And I'm like, are you okay? And he's just like staring blankly at the TV. I'm like, oh my God, he's going to have nightmares for a month and it's my fault.
He was just in the zone, man. Some part of his brain had never worked before is now working. It's like, oh my God.
He probably, and that's the thing, he probably doesn't remember. It was like 4 years ago, so he's like 7 now. And if I even told him the movie existed, he'd go, wow, I don't know what the heck you're talking about. But yeah, he had this look on his face of just pure enticing, like he was just terrified and he couldn't look away.
That's great. I think that movie is a masterpiece, honestly. I think it's fucking great. I loved it as a kid. I've watched it as an adult a few times. I think it's great.
Glad to hear it.
I need to watch it again. It's been a while.
Big fan.
It's got Bob Hoskins, so you can't hate it.
I agree.
No, he's wonderful. I know, as much as I tried to hate that Super Mario Brothers movie, he was in it.
See, I feel like I should watch that now. I feel like I need to watch that. I feel like I need to watch Hollywood Land again.
I totally want to watch Super Mario Brothers because I've seen so many hilarious videos about it that it just, it's not going to make any sense, and I think I'm going to love it.
Oh, it's a terrible movie. Don't get me wrong, but it's at least, you could tell at least those guys, like John Leguizamo and Bob Hoskins, were having a really good time making it. Like, Dennis Hopper plays Koopa, and it's just like a guy in a leather jacket. The movie makes fuck all sense. There's nothing about it that plays in any way, and I think it's fine. It's like that movie Femme Fatale by, who's the guy who makes all the, Brian De Palma. It's just like fucking awful and makes zero sense and it's completely enjoyable. I've watched Femme Fatale probably 6 times in my life and I cannot tell you what that movie is about.
Brian De Palma did make Carlito's Way though.
He did?
And I kind of feel like it's the best contemporary noir film of the last 25 years.
Wow.
I could have to see it.
Again?
You even watched... You've never seen it? Oh, you have?
No, I've seen it. It's been a long time, though. Like, I saw it when it came out. And
it's been a while.
To be fair, it could easily be The Man Who Wasn't There, though. So.
What do you mean?
The Man Who Wasn't There? The Coen Brothers movie? You've seen that, right?
Yeah, but you said it could be. I mean, what
meaning
way?
That actually could be the best contemporary noir film of the last 25 years.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay.
I kind of lean Carlito's Way because I just love that movie, but The Man Who Wasn't There is like, so brilliant, and I think probably the best Coen Brothers movie ever made.
Oh wow, yeah, I loved it. I saw it in the theater, and I think I saw it twice in the theater.
It looked so beautiful. Yeah, I never even heard of it until like 4 years ago. It was on Netflix for a minute, and I was like, "All right, it looks all right." And I watched it. And I was like, "Everybody talks about this one, and this. This is the movie. This is the one everyone should see." That and Miller's Crossing, but
yeah,
now I've derailed again. So. All right, my underrated pick is Batman Dark Victory.
Have not seen it.
Or read it. What is it?
It's, do you remember when Tim Sale and Jeff Loeb did The Long Halloween?
I do.
They kind of did a three-part thing. They did The Long Halloween, and then they did the sequel, which is Dark Victory, and then they did The Haunted Night one, which is kind of, I guess, the prequel to The Long Halloween, but... Dark Victory takes place like 1 year after The Long Halloween, after Alberto Falcone's been outed as the holiday murderer, and now he's under house arrest or something like that, and it's kind of like a continuation, but I feel like nobody talks about it because they're always like, The Long Halloween, that's like the greatest thing of all time, which it is. It's an amazing book, but I feel like Dark Victory is pretty close to as good, maybe equally as good, and... just doesn't get talked about in the same way. So
it's just been eclipsed by its relation to Long Halloween.
Yeah, I think so. I just love it. I've read it a couple times, and I'm like, man, this thing's so good. I love this thing, and this is what they should do more of.
I will have to see it. So these are animated.
No, things? It was a mini maxi series like collected as a graphic novel, I guess.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if they did. Did they do Long Halloween as an animated thing?
Oh my god, I'd love it if they would, but not that I know of, no.
Oh, okay, okay. I was under the impression they had for some reason. I read Long Halloween when it came out, which was like, what, 20-something years ago?
Yeah.
So crazy to think about how long that's been. I read that when it came out, because I love Tim Sale's art.
Yeah.
I was just... I read Deathblow, because he drew it for a while.
I think I read one Deathblow miniseries.
It wasn't very good. It was like, you know, I don't know if you remember Deathblow, like kind of a rehashed Punisher sort of thing.
Yeah, that's kind of what I got out of it.
Yeah. Jim Lee's art, fine, but Tim Sale, that guy kicked ass. Anyway, now I'm derailing. At least when you derailed, they were both murder mysteries. The Man Who Wasn't There and Hitler's Crossing. Okay. Mine, again, I had a hard time because honestly, I started thinking, like, what's overrated? What's underrated? Like, well, everything in the genre that I know about, I generally really love. So I just tried to pick something that I don't know if a lot of people have read, and it's the book Strangers on a Train by Patricia Highsmith.
Is that the one that was made into the Hitchcock film?
It was, yeah. The Hitchcock film, I think, is good, but the book is so good. It's great. I don't know if you're familiar with Patricia Highsmith.
No.
She wrote the Mr. Ripley books, like Talented Mr. Ripley and all that stuff.
Oh, okay.
She was, this is like the 1950s. She was a raging drunk, violent, alcoholic lesbian who wrote crime fiction mainly from the male perspective. And she's apparently incredibly abusive to her girlfriends. She was just a monster, and I love her, and I think she's amazing. And everything I've read by her, I've just fallen in love with. She's one of my favorite writers of all time, not just crime writers. Like, I think she's amazing.
I think I read about her a few months ago, and I kind of mentally tried to remember to bookmark her because I was like, oh, I like the sound of this woman. She sounds insane.
Yeah, I've read a few of her things. She didn't write a ton. I mean, she did write a bit, but she wasn't like Jim Thompson, where she wrote like 500 novels or whatever, who I also love a lot, if you guys have read Jim Thompson stuff. Well, we talked about Jim Thompson, right?
I think, yeah, a few times.
Yeah. Killer Inside Me also was... I was going to maybe put that down, but I was like, well, that's not... Again, I'm not. I'm kind of bending the rules of murder mystery here. I'm just going more crime fiction. I couldn't help it. And then to say Killer Inside Me, that's like one of the highest rated things of all time, so I can't say it's underrated. I think Stanley Kubrick called it the most like chilling novel of our generation or something.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, but Jim Thompson and Patricia Highsmith, I kind of put in the same level of just like amazing writers who also are fucked up human beings who thank God they wrote, because they probably would have killed if they didn't.
I want to say that I heard about, I think there's a documentary about like crime fiction and noir on the DVD, the 70th anniversary of Double Indemnity, and I think that's where I heard of her, because I think they talked about like the history of like the like Argosy and Black Lizard all the way through like Jim Thompson and, you know, Double Indemnity being like the one of the high points of the genre or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where I maybe heard of her.
Yeah, she's. I really recommend those books. They're super readable. You get through them pretty quickly. Not that that's necessarily always a bonus, but just for our busy lives, you know, it's kind of nice to know that you won't be sitting there slogging through, you know, hours of Yukio Mishima style descriptions of a waterfall that go on for 20 pages. Like, it's, you know, it's a good, quick, intense novel, even though it's not, Strangers on a Train, even though it's not like action packed or anything. It's just because it's told from a first person perspective of one of the character who sort of meets the fucked up guy in the train. And it gives you a lot more of the motivations than you get from the Hitchcock novel. I heard the Hitchcock movie. I mean, the Hitchcock movie, I think, is a great movie. It ends insane with the merry-go-round or whatever, but the book is great, super great. There's much less of a good guy in that book, and it's like you're slowly watching someone just make the worst fucking decisions. It's awesome.
I'm definitely going to bookmark this then.
Yeah. I don't often throw out all the book recommendations, but the Carry and Comfort and Strangers on a Train by Patricia Highsmith, I think, are two absolute necessities,
and they've been added.
Duly noted.
Excellent.
All right, well, I guess since I forgot last week, I'll not forget this week. We're gonna move to best thing ever, and wow, I had so many things go through my head all day, and I had the perfect one, and now I can't remember what it is. So why don't Brian go while I think for a minute.
I actually got a good one this week.
I had a couple. I'm so mad now that I forgot.
Yesterday. All right, go ahead.
Okay. I remembered. I totally remembered. I don't know how I forgot, because since it came out less than a week ago, I've watched it like four times. Jean-Claude Van Johnson. Holy shit. That show is hilarious.
What is that?
Seconded.
There is, well, I'm sure you're aware of Amazon. They do Prime Season or soever. So they released last Friday their pilots for, you know, possible upcoming shows. It's basically a sitcom starring Jean-Claude Van Damme, where it's based on his quote-unquote real life, where he used to work as an action star, but he also worked as a black ops, like, spy killer kind of guy under the code name of Johnson. And it's just a completely, like, out of shape, not ready for battle kind of... It's seriously, if you have Prime, do yourself a favor.
It's so good.
It is... Like, it is so much better. And here's the part that's terrible. Like my boss at work, I guess you could say, he watches Archer. He watches, you know, Always Sunny. He watches a lot of the same shows. I'm like, dude, you need to fucking watch this. He came into work yesterday. He's like, dude, how drunk were you when you watched that Jean-Claude Van Johnson? I'm like, dude, not. I was stone sober. Like, I didn't have a drink. Why? He's like, I came home from work. I was told my wife, I'm like, we need to watch this. Scott says it's the best. And I could just feel the piercing eyes, like, staring at me the whole time. He's like, that was the dumbest thing I've ever seen. I'm like, dude, you're out of your mind. Like, if I was your boss right now, I would totally fire you. Like, what? I thought you were a cool guy. You just totally, I lost respect for you.
I'll say your boss right now is the dumbest person I ever met.
Right?
And I've never met him, so
there you go. It's so, so amazing. It's just...
Just the workout montage alone was amazing.
Yeah.
As he keeps lowering the thing on the whatever that workout machine.
Dude, the roundhouse is the best. Whatever. I don't want to give too much away, but seriously, if you're listening to this and you have Prime, you can pause this right now and go watch Jean-Claude Van Johnson.
Actually, The Tick is quite amazing.
I've watched that three times, but I'm just saying.
Wait, The Tick? Like, there's a new The Tick?
Yes.
Yeah, you know the guy from Guardians of the Galaxy that's like John C. Reilly's sidekick? He's the British guy. I think he was also in Kingsman.
Yeah, he's been in a bunch of stuff. I know that guy. He's funny.
He plays The Tick, and it is so good. Man, it's so good.
I might get Prime.
It's so good. I hope they... I wouldn't necessarily run out and get Prime unless they pick it up, because it's really like one episode. It's called Pilot Season. They like let you vote, but I watched The Tick four times because it's just... like my favorite thing ever right now.
Did you like the other one that was on in the 90s or early 2000s?
I didn't at the time, but I love the new one so much that I'm going to seek out the Patrick Warburton one and rewatch it and make myself like it, because I think the new one is so just unbelievably funny.
I'm on board, man. I love the Patrick Warburton. It had a lot of problems. It had a lot of there's a lot of weakness in that show. But Patrick Warburton as The Tick was fantastic.
Yeah, the I can't remember the guy, Pete something. He was in.
Yeah, that guy's super funny. He's got a great voice. Is he playing British?
No,
okay.
No. It's like Adam West on steroids. It's like here's the thing. Like when Adam West did Batman, he did Batman as he thought Batman should be done. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, through the course of decades and time, like the Adam West persona has become a character profile in and of itself. So this guy is doing, like, the uber-confident, super-positive, completely out-of-his-mind Adam West character version of The Tick. And it's... Oh, my God, it's so fucking funny.
Like, I gotta see that. I mean, I love the Adam West thing because it's... Clearly, he was not pulling from anyone else's... Like, he wasn't inspired by anyone else. That was, like, a brand new thing.
Yeah.
Or if he was inspired by someone else... It doesn't read at all. He was, you know, he can't be like, oh, I was trying to do Charlton Heston in Ten Commandments. Like, no. Like, if you were, you missed the mark by a lot, because that is not what I saw up there. What I saw up there was fucking insanity.
Yeah, that's pretty much what this. That's pretty much what this is. Like, this guy is doing. It's like just the scenes in the apartment where he's pulling all these things, and the guy's like, "What are you doing? My mother bought me that lamp."
I will see this because I love the old one, but that old one was like, you know, that old one was just an allegory for like gay relationships that were like just becoming acceptable to talk about in media. So if you watch the Patrick Warburton one, it's not it, like a lot of the humor isn't cutting anymore because that's not shocking to us anymore.
Yeah.
Not that it really would have been, but you know, when you're watching and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe someone's mom is watching this. Like everything they're saying is just about a gay relationship. And now you watch it, you're just like, ah, it's fine, whatever. You know, it's, doesn't read the way, same way it did. So it sounds like they had to totally reinvent that whole thing, or not reinvent it, just completely go a different direction. So that's what I want to see about The Tick. Cause I love the cartoon. Like I said, I love the Patrick Warburton thing, but this sounds, I am already giving it a good review, and I've only heard about it about 45 seconds ago.
It's basically like making fun of superhero shows while completely, like, it feels like the Marvel movies are fine with the characters as they are, but they are kind of, they dance around it being a superhero world, whereas this thing is like totally a satirization of superhero universes while gleefully saying, like, we are a superhero show all the way. And it's just super funny, and it's, yeah, like, I pretty much, my feeling was, it's like, if you made Daredevil with Adam West, and, like, I forget what else, but it's just so, it doesn't make any sense, and yet it's just perfect, I think.
Awesome. Well, I'm on board. I'll figure out a way to watch it. I might get, someone paid me for artwork today, so maybe I can justify a year of Prime for some of that money, but I don't know. I gotta pay my rent, too.
You can also, I mean, you can get the free 30-day trial and just cancel it after, like, 3 weeks.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, maybe I'll do that.
Or if you know anyone with a valid college ID or valid college email address, you can get Prime half price.
Interesting. I do know someone.
Just saying.
Or if you got a friend that's got Prime, I'd just go to their house and watch it.
I suppose I could do that, too. I like the idea of hanging out with college girls to try to get their college IDs from them. Officer, I swear to God, I was just trying to get Prime for cheap.
Revealing a lot right now.
Yes, I am. Man, I don't know if I'm gonna. I don't know if I'm gonna have that good a one. I tried to think of some. I saw One Punch Man last night for the first time. I thought that was pretty good.
One Punch Man. What is that?
It's like the most popular manga or anime or whatever in Japan right now.
Oh, okay.
It started as like an online manga, and it wasn't very good. And the guy who was making it got some guy in Japan who makes anime, like, saw something really wonderful in it, and took this guy under his wing. And after a year, they released this show. I think it's on Netflix. It's definitely on Hulu. Called One Punch Man, and it's essentially like an anime superhero show that sends up a lot of other shows. Like, the first villain looks like the bad guy from Dragon Ball Z, kind of. But he's kind of like, I'd almost say, like, he's sort of autistic feeling. Like, he tries to be a superhero for fun, but he's really upset because every time he hits someone, one punch is all it takes to, like, kill them. So he's always really bored. Like, he goes to, like, fight some huge monster that's, like, just weighing lace to a city, just killing everyone, and just this horrible violence. And you see One Punch Man being like, oh, okay. And he kind of just, like, saunters over to the bad guy. And it's got all these really... It's all dubbed, too. Or not, it's all subtitled. You can't see it dubbed. There's no dubbed version, as far as I know. But he'll, you know, he'd be like... his backstory is really, really satisfyingly stupid and simple, where he talks about how he saved someone from, like, this big crab monster man. And the crab monster man is, like... His upper half looks like a giant muscular crab with, like, this ridiculous, like, cartoon eyes. And the bottom half of him is just a normal man's body wearing, like, tidy whities. And so he's, like, and he's talking about how the crab man's talking about how he's come to the city. He's just come to the city to kill this kid with a big chin. Anyway, it's really weird. So One Punch Man ends up defending this kid. And he's so inspired, he decides to train for 3 years and becomes the most powerful superhero in the world by just training for 3 years. That's, like, all it took. Oh, but in the training was so intense that his hair fell out.
I don't know what this is, and it's not on Netflix, but I love it. I think it's my favorite show ever.
It's crazy. And the drawings are beautiful. They're so well done, and they switch styles constantly. Like, sometimes when things are moving really fast, it just looks like a bunch of pencil lines. Like, it almost doesn't look like... Like, it looks like it was, like, poorly animated, but it works really well. Sometimes One Punch Man looks, like, really, like, tough and intense with veins and like really intense bone structure. Other times he just looks like a beige smiley face, like Charlie Brown or something. So it's very crazy. I've only seen the first episode. I can't speak to how the rest of the show goes, but it's nuts, and so I'm definitely going to watch it. But it's I had some other things, but I think I'll end with that because I feel like that that's good. We'll see. Like I said, we'll see. As I saw one episode, it could completely fall apart. I mean, the idea of the show of a superhero who defeats every enemy with one punch, regardless of their size, is kind of funny to me. But I don't know how many legs it has, or how much you know. But so far, I'd definitely recommend the first episode.
I think I'm hitting the interwebs tomorrow. Nailed it.
Yeah, I'm sure it's on there.
Well, all right then. That will. Brian's pointing at himself.
Yeah, I didn't go yet.
What do you mean you didn't go yet?
I was going, and then you said, "Oh wait, I remembered." So,
oh,
we talked about Jean-Claude Van Johnson for like an hour.
Oh, that's right. All right, so
mine's good. I can't let this one go.
Okay.
All right. So yesterday, we're sitting at work. Random conversation about the weather, because the weather here in Chicago has been a little weird. Super hot all summer. And then all of a sudden, like overnight, it dropped into like the mid-60s to like low 70s, and it's been kind of in that range now for about a week. Usually it stays really hot through August into like the first week or two of September, then it starts to taper off. But anyway, so they're talking, and this woman goes, "Man, we have really screwed this planet up." She's like, "We have just done so much damage." And I'm like, "Interesting." And she starts going on, and she's like, "We never should have been like firing all these rockets in the air and so on and so forth. It's just done irreparable damage." I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but I turn around. I'm like, "Interesting." I'm like, "Yeah, that may be a thing." Because I'm thinking she's talking like bombs, drones, war, like changing the topography of, you know, various regions of the planet, throwing all kinds of chemicals and smoke and fire into the air and, you know, doing some kind of damage. I'm like, yeah, there's obviously a lot more than just that, but, you know, that's an interesting possibility. And she's like, "I'm telling you, I was 4 when they launched that first rocket into space." And she's like, I know they've been screwing it up ever since." And I turned around, I go, "Whoa, are you talking about the space program?" And she's like, "Yeah." She's like, "It's complete bullshit." She's like, "We don't need it." And I'm like, "Explain." And she's like, "All these rockets just going through the sky, punching holes in the atmosphere, damaging the environment. That's the reason why the weather's all fucked up." And she's like, "And what has it ever given us? Nothing." And I was like, "Okay." And I picked up my phone. I'm like, "Global telecommunications?" I go, "For beginners? I mean, the space station exists. Satellites. You could download." I'm just like, "What about all that?" She's like, "We'd be better off with horse and carriage." And I was just like, I don't think I can say anything else. Like, I'm having a real hard time with this. Like, she pretty much said we should go back to, like, living in huts.
Yeah, sure, let's do it.
And then, like, she literally went back to her desk and started downloading ebooks. And I'm like, "Do you understand? What you just said completely contradicts what you're doing right now."
Yeah, you want to be like, "Are you fucking with me?"
I thought she was kidding, but she was dead serious. And I was like, "Oh, my God." I told my friend, like, who works in the same office. I'm like, "Dude, did you hear any of this?" I mean, obviously, I had to cut it way down, but the conversation was fucking nuts. And I was just like, "These are the people I work with. I work with these people. This is insanity." Like, and more stuff was said today that I was just like, "Dude." But that's about a whole nother topic. But yeah, like, the people I work with, I'm just completely always surprised by. And yesterday, to me, this woman just tore the she literally said that all of our environmental issues have to do with launching rockets in outer space.
Man, she does not know how that works.
And that we do not belong out there. And I was just, yeah, I was just like, okay. Maybe mine's not as good as I thought. But yesterday, it was amazing.
No, that's great, man. When you come across someone like that, I mean, it seems like you're coming across like a four-leaf clover with an address. You know, it's like, it seems super rare, but then you get those realizations like, you know what? A lot of our country is exactly like this.
More than we would probably like to admit.
And she's a woman I generally like, but like, when she said this yesterday, I was just like, oh my God, now I know why Trump is a thing.
Yeah. Oh my God. I always make the mistake of having conversations with people, you know, that I know maybe a little bit. Like, because once I know you a little bit, I share a lot. I'm definitely an oversharer kind of person. But I mean, I realize I got to catch myself from doing that whole thing. Like, you know, well, you're like a super liberal atheist with like a really extensive knowledge of hardcore, right? Like, like I got to remember that. Like, not everyone is like me. Like, in fact, very few people are like me. And that's not trying to be like elitist or anything. It's just that my perspective is sometimes a little skewed on what the rest of the world thinks and how they think and what they care about. Because, you know, people will be complaining. I'll hear people complaining about shit like, you know, on Facebook, even people that are like, you know, in my network of friends. I'm just like, oh my God, these people care about fucking dumb shit. Oh my God. And, you know, and I get surprised sometimes.
I think the thing that surprised me also about that is there were other people in our office that were like, I agree, we should just go back to snail mail and carrier pigeon. And I'm just like, they're not kidding. They're not kidding. They want to get rid of the internet and the space program is what's caused all the problems. I'm sure the Illuminati's involved.
Be like, you know who else wants to go back? It's fucking ISIS. Like, ISIS's whole thing, people think this is some sort of war against Christianity or some bullshit like that. It's a war against modernity. I mean, these extremist groups using airplanes and missiles and diseases and whatever the fuck they're trying to do to kill everyone or whatever they think people are trying to do, they're trying to just, it's the death rattle for that sort of level of superstition. I mean, this is, you know, people are becoming atheist and agnostic at a much higher pace than they've ever before, and a lot of it is because everyone's learning about shit and they're just like, oh fuck, Earth isn't the center of the universe, and oh, God's not real, okay, you know. And people born into this world, born with this access to information, they're not beholden to their parents to be like, you know, oh, what's real. Like, they can go, kids can find out for themselves. I mean, you know, I've got a little girl who, you know, loves Santa Claus, and she's 7. I'm just, like, waiting till the day that she looks it up online. It's not going to take long.
That's what I was thinking when I picked up my phone. I'm like, all the knowledge that's available publicly is on this. You could look at it, and you will see that you are not entirely correct in your current assessment of the weather being weird.
Yeah, and people are, I mean, they're fighting it. I mean, I told you I argued with my brother about politics a while back, and he was like, well, you got your facts, I got mine. And I was like, that's not how it fucking works, man.
That's exactly what I was thinking the whole time. I'm like,
No, see, there's not two sets of facts here, son. There's one.
Yeah, it's if there was others, they wouldn't be facts. I mean, you're thinking opinions, and opinions are not facts. That's the whole John Oliver thing. He's talking about how the Republican Party is built on feelings. You see this thing?
No, but I need to see it now.
I think it was John Oliver, somebody, and they were showing all these clips about, like, they had, who was it, Newt Gingrich, I think, on, and he was talking about how he's like, well, you know, people are much less safe now under Obama than they were. And the woman's like, well, that's not true. He goes, oh, it is true. She's like, no, it's not true. If you look at the crime rate, it's down all over the country. It's been going down since, like, the 70s. Like, the crime rate is at an all-time low. He's like, no. You look at cities like Chicago. She's like, no, sure, there's outliers where, like, you know, crime rates maybe have gone up here and there. And there's places where things spike. But she's like, overall, if you look at the data, it's gone down. He's like, look, you can talk about facts and data all you want, but I have a feeling that it's worse. And I will take my feeling over your facts. I am almost quoting him perfectly. Like, it's almost exactly what he said.
It sounds like exactly what he would say.
And you want to scream like, that's not how it fucking works. Oh my God, are you kidding me? You don't get to just like tell me how you feel and that's somehow valid. Your feelings don't mean anything to anyone except you, and you shouldn't expect them to mean anything to anyone else except you. You know, that's, I'm sorry. I mean, fucking sucks that your fucking platform and your whole thing is just, you know, a dinosaur, and Donald Trump is your death rattle. You know, sorry, but this is how it fucking works. You know, your guys' bullshit has proved to be bullshit, and maybe everyone's kind of over it, and so now you have to fight with feelings. Donald Trump feels that immigrants are coming in and taking all the jobs. Donald Trump feels that we're unsafe. I mean, I don't know if he actually feels those things. I think he thinks they feel those things, and he just placates to whoever is going to give him attention and power and whatever else the fuck that person needs. Anyway, rant.
It's a good rant. I'm into it.
Thanks. Yeah, look up Republicans' feelings, and I'm sure you'll find it. It's pretty wonderful, because it's just so many examples of that exact thing happening. I mean, there's the guy who's talking about how he's sure Obama's a Muslim. He's like some actor or whatever. I mean, first of all, it wouldn't matter if he was. I mean, who cares? I mean, he's a Christian. That's just as bad. You know, it's another fake dumb religion. I don't.
Right.
Sorry.
No, I completely agree.
People how dare you insult my religion that I don't have?
I just get extra hyperbolic when I start getting excited. That's all. But you know, I mean, that's you know, to me, that's just as dumb. So.
Yeah, people are very confused.
And then the guy's like, "Oh, I'm certain he's a Muslim." And the person's like, "Well, he's not." And he's like, "Well, no, I know he is because I can feel it. I mean, I know these things." It's like, "No, you don't know these things. If people knew things, they would just go out and win the lotto. They would just go do it because they knew the numbers. You don't get to know things. It's not how that works.
You feel the numbers,
right? Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what people do. I mean, the reason there's no faith healers in hospitals healing people is because that shit is fake. The reason there's no psychics winning the lotto all the time is because that shit's fake. The reason the Republicans aren't winning over the youth with their fucking, like, let's just tax the rich less and their riches will trickle down onto you like rain from the clouds, because that shit doesn't work. We tried it before. Like, this shit has been tested. You can put it in a laboratory and you can use numbers that are totally not subjective, and you could look at it and be like, yep, here's how it works. Like,
yeah, there's not two ways to view these numbers and go, well, I am going to interpret them differently.
Yeah. It's fucking nuts, man.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, that got me going.
So, yes, space program, I'm all for it. Just saying.
Right.
I'm all for it, too.
As much as
I would love to be on the next rocket, out of here. How much I'm into it.
I'm just going to say, as much as we can have a whole other conversation about security apparatus, I like the internet. I think it's neat, and I want to keep it. So,
I'm into it.
You can send your mail via carrier pigeon all you like, and if you want to blaze the Oregon Trail and fight a bear with a half-broken cactus, be my guest.
Don't forget to cock the wagon when you fucking cross the river. Try not to lose. Don't lose too many oxen.
Yep, I will drive and listen to the radio, and it'll be awesome.
Right, I'll see you there in 2 months when you get your on their fucking horse.
Yeah, ask next tomorrow at work. Ask her if she's scared of diphtheria, because it sounds like she fucking should be.
But then she could look it up on her phone, which she doesn't want anymore because she wants to go back to doing everything on papyrus. So,
yeah.
I just was amazed that people agreed. There were other people in the office. Not many, but there were other like people that I could count with my fingers and go, they agree that this would be a good way to go backwards.
Yeah, you know what this generation needs? It needs mothers to understand what it's like to outlive 9 of their 10 children. That's what we need more of, fucking imbeciles.
Just because they don't want to learn Excel.
Yeah. Oh, if it's not learning how to do something in your job, I completely support them.
No, it was just a conversation about, you know, let's talk about the bigger issues. And I was like, this would be interesting, and it was, just not in the way I expected.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah.
All right. Best thing ever.
Not really the best, but actually the best in its own way.
It inspired something there.
It did. It absolutely did. So, we're going to inspire to end this show. As always, you can find me on Twitter at XorsonX. You can find Brian at Pure Rock Fury. You can find Damien at Damien Johnson. And Chris ain't here, so don't worry about him. We will be back next week with another number one, another over-under. Don't forget to go to reviewandroast.com and have a good week.